Hi everyone, and welcome to my talk, and thanks for coming. So today we're going to talk about higher order blind quantum computation. Okay, so in the future, when quantum computers are going to be more developed and more people are going to use it, there will still be a distinction between different types of quantum computers. So there will be quantum computers that will be less powerful and will be able to do only a few things. And there will be like big quantum computers that will be able to do a lot of big computation. And so this means that there will be only a few people that will be able to do big computations. And although there are like big quantum computers that exist, we want that, for example, Alice, that has a small quantum computers, she wants to do big computation. So we want to develop a framework to help the client gain the advantage of the power of the big quantum computer while having only a few computing resources. And the main problem with this is that we want to keep the security of data. So we want that Alice keeps our data private. So for example, if she's doing some computation on our state, we want that our state remains private and that the server, so for example, does not learn anything about Alice. So this type of computation is called blind quantum computation. And that's what we are going to talk about. So first, I'll talk about blind quantum computation and few frameworks that already exist. And then we talk about higher order blind quantum computation, how we can extend this type of computations to higher order transformations. So one big key notion of the blind quantum computation is the one-time pad. So the idea of the one-time pad is that you have a data and you want to randomize it and to apply some key, for example, on it, such that for the attacker or for anyone that does not know your key, your data seems completely random. So an example in classical security is that when you have one string X, then you ping one random string Y, and then you XOR them both. And then for the attacker, if he does not know the key, then he cannot know anything about X, and then you can apply Y back and you can get back your data. In the quantum world, it's a little bit more complicated, but we can still do it. So if we have a quantum state flow, we can, so as Alice, we can choose to apply randomly either the identity X, Y, or Z, so any polymatrices. And for an outside point of view, then you apply the one of those four gates with probability 1/4. And actually all this calculus for any quantum state flow, it gives you an identity over two, so the maximally mixed state. So this means that from an outsider point of view, if you don't know which gate you applied, then for him, the qubit that you have is a maximally mixed state. And in quantum information, the maximally mixed state is the state where you cannot learn any information. So that's where the information is the lowest. This is a completely depolarizing channel, but that's something we'll come back after. So one framework that exists in blind quantum computation is secure assisted quantum computation, which was developed by Andrew Childs. And the idea is that you have a state and you want to apply some gate on it. You don't have the gate yourself, but we know that due to the universality of gates, then any gate you can decompose it in a set of gates. So for example, in this set of gates, so H, T, and the C naught, any gate you can decompose it as a product of those gates. And the idea is that you don't want to hide what computation you are doing, but you say, okay, then my gate, I can write it as a product of those gates. Then each time I will go talk with a server that does this gate. So for example, I will go talk with Bob that tells you, okay, I can do H. You send your qubits, it does H, and you get back your qubits. But before sending your qubits, you want to secure your qubit. So here you do actually the same thing. So you apply some gates randomly, so X and Z, so that your qubit before sending it to Bob is random, and not random, but it's a mixed state from an outside person point of view. Then you apply H, then you apply the gate backs. And then for you, so you send your qubit while applying some first gate before randomly. And for Bob, he applies the gate, but he cannot learn anything because the state that is receiving is a mixed state, so it cannot learn anything. A second framework of computation is called universal blind quantum computation. Only this type of framework, the computation that you want to do is also you also want to for it to be secure. So this makes use of the measurement-based quantum computation scheme. So this scheme of computation is when you have a lot of qubits that are all prepared in the same state, and then they are also entangled. Some of them are entangled with another, and then you choose to do some random, not random, but you choose to do some measurement on each qubit. And depending on the result, because the result is random, you will change the next measurement that you will do. And with all of this type of computation, then at the end you can obtain any set of qubits. Then what this protocol does, it makes use of the same thing, but now it has some random in the measurement that you are doing, such that so Alice, she prepares some qubits in a random fashion. She sends them to Bob, and she tells Bob, "Okay, you entangle this qubit with this qubit." And then at each round, she tells, "Okay, you measure this qubit in this basis." On the basis in which she measured, Alice she randomized the basis where she measured, so that Bob cannot learn anything about the basis. Because if Bob learned the basis where you are doing the in which basis you are doing the measurement, then he could learn back the computation. But due to the fact that it's a random basis, then for Bob he cannot learn anything. And then Alice get the measurement back, and due to with the randomness that she shows, then she can update her measurement angle and sort of navigate through all of this randomness to get back a computation. So the qubits are prepared in a certain state that are graph states. So she prepares the qubits, she sends them to Bob. The measurement angle are randomized, and on Alice. So she prepares some qubits that she sends to Bob to do the computation, but she also has her qubits that are input where she wants to apply the get on. On those gates, she applies a one typepad on it. On this one typepad, it's taken into account in the process. So this means that what runtime she applies on her qubits, she will take it into account and change her future measurement angle from that. And so we have no problem. The one typepad is in the process, so we have no problem of it disturbing the computation that we are doing. So all of this paper in blind quantum computation have been written, sorry, a few years ago, and when we consider that the client has very low power, because for example in this case we consider that okay, Alice she can only create some simple qubits in a finite set of qubits, we can say, and apply only Pauli matrices. But maybe we can say, because in quantum algorithm we can think of algorithm where Alice needs more power than that. We can say, okay, maybe Alice she can do more, she can have more power. So new computers they can have more power, but still they are still limited. So if we update the level of computation that Alice can do, can we also update the level of computation that the computer can do, so that Alice can do more stuff with the help of computers? So in this higher order scheme, we consider that now Alice she has a quantum description of a state, and she also has a quantum description of a gate U. So before she has only a classical description of the gate she wanted to apply. Now she has the gate, but we can say that she does not know the gate, but she has the gate and she has the state, and she can compute simple and non-gate on a finite number of qubits. And she wants to have access to higher order transformation and more qubits. So this means that she wants to transform her gate to another gate. But this transformation will maybe work on more qubits, and maybe she does not have the capacity of doing this. So one example where we can use this is the DQC1 algorithm, which is the following. So the DQC1 algorithm is an algorithm where you have a gate U that you do not know, and you want to compute the trace of U. So in order to do this, you have one qubit that is prepared in a plus state, and n qubits that are prepared in the maximally mixed states. And then you do an operation which is the control version of u. And then the first qubit, you measure it. And the second qubit, you trace it out. And then if you do this this algorithm multiple runs, then you can estimate the trace of u. The problem is that we can say, OK, I give you a box, which is u, and I want you to estimate the trace of u. But we know that there is no easy transformation from a gate to its control version. So we cannot, with Alice Powers, you cannot do like just, I have the gate, and hop, I have a control version. But there exists some supermap. If you sort of modify the gate u, there exists some supermap which can modify a gate u to this control version. So the idea is to say, Alice, she has the gate, she still prepares those qubits, and then here she communicates with the server such that she sends her qubit, she sort of sends her gate, and with the server, with the help of the server, she creates the control version of u. And all of this while keeping the main idea that we want the data to remain private. And one big result that we are going to use, so each higher order transformation, we can call it a supermap. And each supermap that is in a definite causal order, there is a theorem that tells you that it can be written as a decomposition of isometries. So V and W here are isometries. And you can write isometries as unitaries if you adapt it a little bit and you need to discard some qubit at the end. But you can still have this decomposition for any supermap. So a supermap is a linear function that preserves traces and is completely positive. But you have this transformation. And the idea that we can have is, OK, then, if we say that this is a unitary, and this we have, maybe we can make use of the Blyde quantum computation scheme to compute this and this. And then to have like multiple rounds of communication in order to help Alice to create this supermap. So in the following, I will consider two situations where in each situation, the client has different knowledge of the supermap. So the first situation that I can consider is to say, OK, then Alice, she knows the supermap decomposition. So what I mean by that is she knows V and W, because maybe she could have not know it, but we can say, OK, she knows V and W, so she knows how to implement it, but she does not have the implementation herself. So she knows the unitary V and W, but she has only a classical description of it. She does not have it physically with her. So she can make use of a server that can compute unitary. So for example, either the UBQC protocol or the Chiles protocol, if she wants to keep the computation that she's doing private or not. And with multiple rounds of communication, she can actually manage to create this unitary. So the idea is the following. She has her input state here. Then she communicates with the server to realize this V unitary on her qubit. She gets the result back. As she has a quantum description of U, she can apply the gate U on her state. So she applies it. Then she applies W with the help of the server. Then she discards the remaining qubits. And here she has the result of her computation. And as everything is for the UBQC and the Chiles, as every protocol is private and everything is such that for an outside point of view, the data that you have is completely random and is a mixed state, then if we have multiple rounds of communication, it will not change the security. And for the server, you will still get the still keep the security requirements, and therefore Alice data will remain private.
So can you repeat what is the knowledge of Alice, which is the knowledge of the server?
So in the first case, the server has no knowledge.
Okay.
And Alice, she knows this decomposition. So because in the case of the control version, we can write this this as a supermap with one use of u, and we can find unitaries V and W such that we can write it like this.
Okay.
So in the first case, we suppose that, okay, we can write it like this, and Alice knows that how she can write it. So she knows V and W classically. And then if she knows V and W classically using the previous protocols, then she can implement it. And then it's just like a simple communication quantum algorithm where she applies V, she applies W, but just those two unitaries that are applied not by herself, but with the help of a computer.
So who applies U? Was it Alice?
Yes.
Okay. And could you clarify what you mean by the classical description of the gate and the quantum description of the gate?
So when I mean classical description of a gate, it means that you have the matrix, you have all the coefficients. And quantum description of the gate is you have a physical device that is capable of doing the transformation, but you do not know all the coefficients. Because if we take back, for example, the case of DQC1 where you want to estimate the trace of U, if you have a classical description of U, then you can compute the trace yourself and there is no need for any quantum algorithm. But if you say, okay, I give you a black box that does a unitary transformation, but you have no knowledge of it, you just have a box, then you, with this algorithm, you can estimate the trace of the box. So quantum description is a black box, we can say, that does a physical operation, but you do not know anything about the physical operation. And classical description is you have the matrix, you know what the operation is doing, but you cannot, but you don't have the physical implementation. So yeah, the security is kept because of the all the one template that are happening. So now we consider a second situation where Alice, she wants to compute some nonlinear map f of u. And in the case where the map is nonlinear, then the decomposition from before, it does not exist anymore. So you have, in a way, no guarantee that you can write it as a product of multiple unitaries where you put your unitary. So she has a classical description of this map, so she knows what the map is doing. And then here comes Bob, and he tells you, okay, I have a supermap description of it, so which needs multiple copies of you, but with multiple copies of you, I can create your map. I can do it. And one example of this is so there was a paper published recently which told that basically you can find the inverse of any unitary for any dimension. But before this paper, we couldn't know that this was happening. And the paper was written by a guy that quit this company recently. So we can imagine a world where he didn't quit the company, and the company has the stuff, but she does not want to publish it because it can be a big breakthrough to technology. So of course, in this type of computation, Alice wants to keep her state and get private, but the company, she also wants to say, no, but that's my implementation, I don't want you to learn it. And I want to keep as much information as possible about my information. So now we have a second requirement, is that the Bob wants to leak as less information as possible about his implementation of the supermap. So because he wants to keep like his industry secrets in a way. So we can say that we have no information on Bob's implementation. Maybe he's implementing it in the UBQC style, maybe in child style, maybe just have a black box, like they found a black box randomly and oh, wow, it works. So we have no idea of how it works. So we cannot assume that Bob is implementing it in any way. We can choose to say, okay, you need to implement this in such fashion, but you have no guarantee that he's doing it either in UBQC style or child style, or he just have like a random matrix that works. And moreover, if you wanted to extend the UBQC protocol, because of the fact that there are two sources of data, the one that is the encryption of the qubit inputs, and the other one, which is the measurement angle, then if we want both data to remain private, we cannot do that because in either way, if we want to adapt the UBQC protocol, then one part or the other will learn some information about the other. So we will still have multiple communication rounds, because Bob can assume that if he needs multiple copies, the ID is the same. We will apply some unitary, and then at one time he will need our copy of you, so he will send us back our state. We will apply you, and then we continue to do this. So the ID that we try to do is to find one tempad for Alice that will commute with the unitaries, so that if Alice applies some random matrices before, then Bob applies his unitary and she can apply it back so that it did not disturb the computation, but for Bob, but also for Bob, we want that the one time pad does not give you all the information about Bob implementation. So the first part that we want to do is to find matrix that commute with a given unitary while not while keeping some information about this unitary. So little math. If we have a matrix that is unitary, we can always write it as this form, so p dagger dp, so that's the diagonalization. D is a diagonal matrix, and we want to find any unitary that commutes with it. And we can show that if unitary commutes, if m commutes with u, then the matrix m in the basis p needs also to commute with d. So this means that if we find result of matrix commuting with diagonal matrices, then we can adapt it to the general matrices. Then we can show that any diagonal matrices, if you commit with the diagonal matrices, then you have this type of requirement. So this means either two eigenvalues are the same, either your coefficient of your matrix are zero. So what this means, it means that all of those lines means that if you want a matrix that commits with you, then your matrix M in the basis of P, it is a block diagonal matrix, where the size of the block is the multiplicity of the eigenvalues. So this means that if D has two eigenvalues of multiplicity 2, then in the basis of P, M is a diagonal block matrices with two blocks of size 2. And we can try to see, because in quantum we know that the global phase is something that we don't care about, so we could say, okay, I don't want matrix that commute, but we want matrix that commute up to a phase. But actually we can see that if we take an alpha that is different from one, then this condition will be harder. And if we verify this condition, then we at the end we'll still get block diagonal matrix, not block diagonal matrix, but block matrix that are like sort of dislocated, but it will be still a block diagonal matrix. So you have stronger condition, and at the end the same block condition, so it does not make any sense to consider that about this. So we showed that any matrix that commits with U, then in the basis of P, it's block diagonal. So if you consider that all the eigenvalues of U are of multiplicity 1, then any matrix that commutes with U in the basis P, it's a diagonal matrix. But the thing is that, of course, as Alice does not know you, if she wants some matrix that commutes with you, then Bob needs to send her the matrices. And of course, he sends her the matrices classically, because we cannot send quantum matrices like that. So if when Alice receives the matrix and all the eigenvalues are on multiplicity 1, then she can just diagonalize the matrix and she gets back B. And if she gets back P, but that's a big information learned about Bob implementation of the unitary, because that's the basis and that's a big claim. But if the multiplicity are at least 2, then when Alice gets back the matrix, if she diagonalizes it, she will not find back P, but she will find P up to some random basis. So because if we take back the example of our two blocks, if she diagonalizes it, she's gonna get back P times the basis where each block is diagonal. And if Bob chooses this base randomly, then the basis that Alice will learn is this, with this random condition. And with this, Alice can still learn some information about P. So she can learn some cross product of blocks of P, but she cannot learn P fully. So we can assume that that's still a better point than learning P directly. So one lemma that is going to be useful after is to transform any matrix to a product of matrices where the multiplicity of each eigenvalue is at least 2. So in the 4x4 case, we can say, okay, I have a diagonal matrix where all the coefficients are non-zero, and I note them alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Then I can find 6 coefficients such that I can write D as a product of 3 matrices on the form of each matrices. In each matrix, you have 2 eigenvalues of multiplicity 2. And if we use this result, then we can transform any matrix of size 4 into a product of 3 matrices where all the eigenvalues are of multiplicity 2. And that's what we want, because we want that the basis is randomized so that Alice cannot learn back P. And also, I'm considering like diagonal matrix, but we can see that if we say, okay, it's not P, it's P dagger DP, then any diagonal matrix, I can write it as P dagger diagonal P, and it will still work at the end. So that's the starting point, and then we can generalize in two ways.
Is that like one of your results, or is this a known result?
Yes, that's my result. And so if you have any matrix of size 4n, then the diagonal matrix, there are 4n coefficients, but we can say, okay, it's 4n coefficient, or either it's n blocks of size 4. And then each block, we know that each block of size 4, we can write it as a product of 3 matrices from previous result. Then we can write 3 big matrices for each time the each matrix, such that the product of those 3 matrices gives you back the big U in the 4n size. So that's a great result, because for any size up to the rescaling, we can write it as a product of 3 matrices. There is another way of generalizing it, which is less efficient, but that we need for after, is to say, okay, if you have a matrix of size n, then we can find n minus 1 matrices, where this time you have 2 eigenvalues of multiplicity at least 2, such that the product of U is such as U is a product of those n minus 1 matrices. So this is a result that can be proved by induction. So it's less efficient, of course, because you need the number of matrix that you need from the dimension is linear, nor it's not constant, but for now we need this proposition. So we found a global form of commuting matrices which do not learn too much information about P, but we know that what we really want is that Alice, she chooses one randomly from a set of commuting matrices, and then from Bob's point of view or for if point of view, it's formed a depolarizing channel, so that it forms one time pad, it's one time pad matrices. So if we take a little step aside on some known result on depolarizing channels, so any depolarizing channel can be written with cross operators. So are you all familiar with cross operators? Okay, so the cross operators of the paired depolarizing channel, the easy way to find some are these ones, but we want unitaries because this is not a unitary matrix, and we want unitaries so that Alice can apply the unitaries. So we know that there is a result that tells you that if you have two sets of cross operators that are representing the same quantum channel, then they are linked by a relation that is by a then each coefficient is a sum of the other cross operators, and this all of this stuff is that it's linked by a big unitary, and we can check that having this type of relation, that is it's linked by a unitary, tells you that it's the same as requiring that the unitaries are 2x2 orthogonal under the Frobenius norm. So Frobenius norm is trace of A dagger B. So this means that we need to find these squared unitaries that are 2x2 orthogonal under Frobenius norm, and there are matrices that exist such like that. So that's Silverstor generalized matrices. So they are of this form, which is a complicated form, but basically it's you write diagonal matrices, subdiagonal matrices, and on each coefficient you put powers of the so we are working with D matrices, so So you put powers of the d-unitary roots. And we can check, so we can check due to this relation that we chose, those matrices are cross operators of the depolarizing channel. And we can also check that if we take the inverse of each matrix, it stays cross operators of the depolarizing channel. And so we will denote the set KD as all the inverse of the silver star general matrices of size D. And one other thing is that we need the map to be trace preserving. And the problem that we will show after is that due to the block decomposition, we are not sure that each block will be of trace one. We have no idea. So we need another thing with that to have a mixed state. So I denote this matrix A and M, which is a diagonal matrix of size n plus m, where the first n coefficients are 1 over 2m and the m last coefficients are 1 over 2m. And we denote that every channel that maps any state to this matrix is a quasi-depolarizing channel, because the only thing that you can learn about this matrix is you can learn n on m, but if it's something that is already public, then you cannot learn anything from this state. And so the final result is this one. Sort of final result. So if we have a diagonal matrix of size n plus m, again, like we can work with diagonal matrix and then generalize to any unitary by doing a change of basis. So if you have a diagonal matrix of size m plus n with two eigenvalues of multiplicity m on m, we can write rho as a, b, c, d in this sum basis. So a is a matrix of size m, m, d is a matrix of size n, n, and b, c of size m, n, n, m.
So can you
repeat
this? Yeah.
So we have rho that is a matrix, a density matrix,
yeah,
that is of size n plus m.
Yeah, but A, which is the, what is the dimension of A?
A is the is of size n times n.
N. Okay.
D is m, and n. So basically you decompose it into
n one direction and the other. M times m.
Those times are non-square, non-square.
Okay.
So that you can write it. The idea is that if you put d here, then on the diagonal here, it's when all the eigenvalues are the same. It's where all the eigenvalues are the same. And we will denote x, which is trace of a. So as I said before, we know that trace of rho is 1, but trace of A, we have no idea. It's between 0 and 1, but apart from that, we have no idea. Then, if we choose these cross operators, which depend of A on J and of X, and we sum over all possible operators of this form, then it forms a quasi-depolarizing channel of size n plus m. So K, A, N is a random cross operators acting on for depolarizing channel of size n. KJM is a random operator for a depolarizing channel of size M. And this matrix are diagonal matrix where there is only one coefficient that is different from one, and which is like that. And so just to give a little bit of idea of what's happening. So yeah, together with the previous proposition, it gives you a protocol. So from a point of view different that the one from Alice, well, Alice, she chooses randomly one cross operator in Kn, randomly one cross operator in Km, and then the x that we chose before, for Alice it's something that is fixed because the state rho is fixed. But from an outside point of view, if you have no idea about what state Alice is doing and it's completely random, then A is a matrix that is completely random, and then the trace of A is something that is completely random and uniform over 0 and 1. So from an outside perspective, then you sort of integrate the trace from 0 to 1. And so yeah, there is a dagger here actually, but we can't see it. So that's the form of the channel. And for the diagonal blocks, we can check that it will just give you back the simple way of a simple depolarizing channel of size n on m. And for the off-diagonal blocks, we can use a good property of the Silverstone matrices, at the inverse of the Silverstone matrices, which has where we sum them due to the fact that they are unity roots. Then you get this matrix. And when you sort of do all the calculations, it's come back just to having one integration of one coefficient that gives you zero. And this is the coefficient that we get. And this integrates between 0 and 1 to 0. So this is why at the end we get the A and M. So to conclude the protocol that we can choose, so Bob he has a gate of size U that he wants to do the computation, which is P dagger DP. And then we know by a previous protocol that we can write this gate as a product of N minus 1 gate, where each gate is in the same basis of U as U, and it has two eigenvalues of multiplicity at least two. And Alice, she has a state row where she wants to send to Bob. Then for each round, Bob chooses two random unitary of according size, and he sends to Alice through a classical quantum classical channel the basis P, which is P times the random basis. Then Alice, she chooses randomly two gates, so one to apply in the first block, one to apply in the second block. And she computes, the trace of row in the good basis. And then she applied these cross operators, EI, so in the basis of Bob. So she encoded in the basis of Bob such that it computes with you. And she does it with the help of a third-party server, so doing, for example, UBQC style. And she sends her qubit to Bob. Bob applies UI, and he sends back the qubit, and then applies EI minus 1. And then if we do all those ones, then at the end, due to the fact that we have this decomposition, then Alice has the gate U applied on our state. So to conclude, this is a framework that works with quasi-optimal security of both parties. So quasi-optimal security, Alice security is respected, but Bob security is not respected at fully because we can learn some information about P. You cannot learn P entirely, but you can learn some information about P. There would be a need of a protocol to ensure that Alice is following the protocol because we saw that we can have multiple rounds of decomposition and we want that each unitary is kept private. But if at the end of the computation, Alice she just measured the qubit and sent back one another qubit and she does not care about the result of the measurement, that if she talks to Bob a long time, then she can estimate back P. So, not P, the unitary that Bob is applying. So we would need to sort of create a protocol to ensure that Alice is not doing any measurement on the qubit that she is receiving from Bob and really following the whole protocol from the end. And it would be cool if we find a better decomposition of cross operators, because in the previous protocol we used that the proposition where we can find any matrix, we can write any matrix as a product of n minus one matrices, but there was the result where we can write any matrix as a product of three matrices. And if we could do that, it could be cool, but it's in that case it's harder because you don't have any just one random trace, you have like multiple, and then it's in come back to having integration of multiple integration and integrating over simplex. So it's hard to find any result. And if we solve all of this, a way to continue to check the problem would be to say, for example, Bob tells you, okay, I need four copies to do the implementation of F, but maybe he's tricking you and he's only needed three. So it would be nice if we could develop a way to ensure that Bob is requiring the minimal number of gates to really implement the supermap. So thank you for the lecture.
Very good. Any questions? Is it expected that your protocol can be also be? Is it also possible to consider fully classical client with some computational assumption to extend your protocol? Like using Mahadev's protocol. Is this kind of technique applicable to your protocol or is it some difficult technique?
So can you repeat again?
So
at some point, Mahadev showed that we can consider blind quantum computation with fully classical clients under some computation assumption.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is that your protocol assumes some like restricted capability of but still quantum clients, if I understand.
Yes.
Is it possible, like, is it expected that you can extend your protocol using fully classical clients using some, but maybe I'm asking. Yeah.
I feel like that's, if you are really alone and you don't trust anyone, it's complicated because you want your data to, if you want your data to remain private for your state on your gate, as you need a quantum description of them, because then you are not doing any. You could just do a simulation. Then if you have a quantum description of it, then if you don't have the gate yourself, then if another person has it, then you cannot, if you don't trust them, then it's complicated. But if there is, like you have a, so you have Alice as a classical client, Bob is the super guy, and now there is Charlie that you trust fully, that can do some quantum computation, then maybe it would work. But the good point of this type of protocol is that there is no private channel at all. Every channel that is, I mean, classical and on quantum, every channel is public, and there is no need to have private channel. So maybe if you communicate with Charlie, then you would need a private channel. But I feel like you could adapt the protocol if you trust someone that can do quantum computation and you sort of devise your operation, the classical part and the quantum part.
Thank you.
So just to clarify the roles of each of the agents. So the idea is that Bobby's providing like the actual out, like the computation. Like
yes.
Alice doesn't have access to some procedure. And the idea is that Bobby's wanting to provide Alice with some algorithm, but Bobby's also wanting to kind of keep his algorithm
yes.
like secure. So both Alice doesn't provide Bob with the input to the algorithm, and Bob doesn't want to let Alice know what's actually how the algorithm is.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
So suppose that there are two parties, Alice and Bob, but they are both super powerful. So both they have same computational capabilities, and both they are strong.
Then Alice does not need to communicate with Bob. Then Alice does not need to communicate with.
But suppose they want to steal each other's stuff. Because if they communicate, in order just to. They pretend they're weak. But they're bad. So they steal the secret of the other company.
I feel like the powerful is that you can do some more computation, but you cannot, like. You don't become powerful and just like can check the information of a channel and go through like the whole mixed state stuff. So I'm not sure you can go, but that's the point at the end. It's that in all the protocol, I assume that they want to trick one another, not to trick, but to get the information of one another, but they are acting honestly at least.
They're acting
honestly. Okay. So they are following the protocol, but they may want to steal information from the other. So in the case where they are following the protocol, then you cannot get back any information. But the problem is that, of course, if the decomposition, we can say, okay, it's the following. So you have this type of decomposition. So of course, the whole idea is to decompose V in a product of unitary, so that at the end, here Alice she gets back the result without having learned too much information about V. But of course, if here Alice she does not apply U and she measures the qubits and she talks with Bob a lot of times, then she will estimate the V. Of course, so the the hard point, I would say, is to now find a way so that we are sure that at this point, Alice, she applies you, she does nothing else, and then she continues.
Okay.
So, on even like at each round, she could, each round of the decomposition of each, she could cheat. So, I feel like the, well, as long as they are acting honestly, then I don't think they can steal information, but well, they are trying to cheat then.
Okay, so it's not the protocol for Google talking with Amazon.
Yes.
They cannot.
Okay. Yes, for now, if they can do whatever they want, they will steal too much information. But you don't need to be a good, big computer to see information. You can just be a small one. You can measure the qubits and you get information.
Okay.
Or they will need to be like a way to randomize the decomposition, like to have multiple decomposition at each time you multiple implementation at each time you choose one randomly.
That's it.
But I'm not sure that you can find this for any supermap.
Thank you.
Does Alice have the classical description of V and W?
So that was the first case where she has the classical description of V and W, and then she can do it herself.
So does Alice has the supermap, or does like Alice get Bob to perform the V and W because she can't?
So in the first case, she has the supermap and she asks Bob to do V and W because she cannot, and then in that case, she used like for example the UBQC protocol.
Hmm.
And she keeps V and W private to Bob, and Bob cannot learn anything. And in the second case, she does not have V and W.
So, sorry, just go back. Does Bob not know what V and W are in the first case?
No. Bob is just a random server, and he's not even knowing that we are doing some higher-order transformation. It's just like, the first case actually is just an application of blind quantum computation.
In the beginning, you explained that the one-time path for a state is a choice of operations. So if you don't know which operation was performed, then you consider a uniform mixture over them. No matter what quantum state you started with, you'll end up in the same final quantum state. And so you have no information about the initial quantum state, given the final quantum state.
Mm-hmm.
The analog for that it's a complete analog in terms of these cluster operators. That like any supermap under this kind of random choice, or no, sort of like I guess when you talked about Alice not being able to learn about Bob, you're saying that Bob uniformly chooses one of a family of crosser operators to implement. And is it the case that if you don't know which of those in the family it was, which are sort of all transformed to a particular family, then all supermaps would end up in the same place under this kind of thing, or not quite that strong?
So I'm not sure to understand, but I'll try. So actually, the thing with depolarizing channel is that, okay, if you say S of rho is identity over 2n, over n, then if we change the basis of rho, we can also check that if we change the basis, of course it's the same, but we can see that, okay, that's not what I wanted to say. So the cross operator are of this form, but if you change the cross operator to any other transformation where you keep P and Q the same, then due to the fact that here it's the identity and it works for every row, then it will still be the same. So from if you know the transformation from one set of cross operator to the other, it's only of this form. So you can only transform it as unitary. So in a certain way, if you know PQ, it's maybe it's hard, but if you apply only P, then you can get back P. But the thing is that what I was doing is that you don't have like cross operators, you have like two blocks of cross operators. And so we can sort of randomize the basis. And if we say, okay, I put this in a certain basis and this in the certain basis, then for Alice, she knows what are the cross operators, and she can tell, okay, for each matrix, I will try to find the base, in which basis the cross operators are. And she will find the basis, but it will not be the our basis. It will be a basis that is sort of randomized. And then she cannot learn back. So I'm not sure if that's what you ask, but.
Are you also asking about, you mentioned that the analogy at the beginning was that in the original protocols there's a state psi at the input, and then the output is output state psi. From the output state psi, you cannot learn input state. I think you said that at the beginning, right? Yeah, so the higher order analogy in that case would be that there's an input unitary u.
Right.
That Alice has it is able to prepare as a gate, and then the output is a supermap acting on the unitary, that outputs a new unitary, S of U. So that new unitary is the gate that Alice ends up with. And I guess here from this you cannot return, you cannot, if you just look at S of U, that's a new unitary, you cannot know what the original one was. Unless you knew what was going on in the middle. Any more questions? Any comments about this? So this is work in progress. I don't know if anybody has some ideas. They all do this other thing next, or well, this is not good because X, Y, and Z, or I don't know.
I mean, I have a question, but I think it's more about like blind computing in general that I might not quite. The idea behind the blind computing is kind of the like measurement-based computing paradigm, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Actually, like that's one way of doing blind computing, but the blind computing itself came first as just a question of can we use a quantum computer as a secure way of performing a computation that we cannot perform ourselves.
So I think I was been thinking about was so in reality we have to do these things, like these quantum computers won't operate exactly as we describe in these circuits. They have to operate like fault tolerantly. So you often have a lot of this additional overhead that goes in when you actually perform these computations. And for certain algorithms, like certain ways of doing fault tolerant quantum computation, for example, the way in which you have to perform like certain measurements and like corrections is dependent on the algorithm being run. Like for example, there's like certain models of using like the surface code to perform some procedures will perform certain like classical computations dependent on like the like where like the Clifford gates and the T gates are. And so my thought was how does a principle of blind computation where you're trying to obfuscate the actual algorithm translate to something working fault tolerantly? Is it susceptible to a like side channel classical attack, basically?
I feel like all the protocol is not a way of implementing it, but rather telling which operation you are going to do. So each operation, like, so for example, in the protocol, if Alice is Alice one datapad or Bob implementation, then I feel like it's. It. Like when Alice does encrypt her input, she will talk to UBQC on the UBQC protocol. So there are ways to do UBQC protocol for sort of fault coherently. Sorry. So I feel like the that's more like doing some computation blank which is thought coherent than the protocol. But if you mean like, okay, in each part of the protocol, I do some computation and there is some fault in it, then there is no, I would assume that the different way of computing it are fault tolerant, and then when she call UBQC, then it's fault tolerant and she gets back the perfect state, and when Bob's does the unitary, it's fault tolerant. But
I mean, I guess Bob forms V.
Yes.
So I'm more kind of talking, I think, about the first case, because I think the second case isn't necessarily a problem for Bob. Bob performs V.
Mm-hmm.
So on his machine, he's having to perform some algorithm V, and he's going to have to, like, correct the error on his side, isn't he? So my thought, I'm not sure if it is a problem, it's just how is it that, like, he could correct the error for an algorithm being performed whilst having no knowledge about it? I'm not necessarily sure if, like, that you would get, like, you would actually determine exactly what was going on, but there is definitely certain ways in which fault tolerance is done where, like, the way the errors are corrected are influenced by the structure of the algorithm. I'm not sure if, like, there's a way to do it where you can get rid of that, or you can, like, obfuscate.
I think there are some results on some tries on, like, so we assume, okay, V UBQC style, we are doing some measurement-based style, and there is a certain graph state. And I think there are some ways of, like, transforming your graph state where each qubit, it becomes a qubit encoded in a certain code, like I don't know all of this code, but, like, yeah, a code that can be fault-tolerant to certain errors, and then it will be Alice that will... It will not be the server that will take those errors into account. It will be Alice that will take it into account. And I feel like I'm not quite sure about what's going on, but I feel like if she, due to the measurement results, if she gets something that is quite strange, then she can adapt to her future measurement result. Or so the server is only like receiving qubits, untangle them, and measuring them. It's the only thing it does. And that will be Alice's job to create a certain pattern, for example, so that the she can check when the measurement tells you that there must have been a fault.
Good. Okay. Any more questions?
No, maybe let's thank Thomas again.
Thank you.